This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, and I'm joined for this segment by another member of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois, Richard Dye. And Dick Dye has been on the faculty since 1990, and basically looking at specializing research as far as government finances and budgeting practices. And he is a co-author of a report to be released tomorrow as part of the Fiscal Futures Project at the Institute regarding the way Illinois does its budgets and how it should improve to in so many areas. But the first way they could improve, wouldn't it be to have a budget?
Well, obviously. And so, you know, if you can't analyze the budget because we don't have one, then you should I have to find some other use of my time. So
That explains everything. Yeah,
so Illinois' budget problems are huge. An underlying structural gap on the order of $4-6 billion. And accumulated deficits from accumulated IOUs from past deficits way in excess of $150 billion. And that's the big problem. That's the huge problem. That's the content of the problem. But contributing to how we got here and very useful in looking at in its own right are the practices
Which contribute to how we got there.
That have enabled, concealed even, many of the past choices that allowed us to get so long and so deep into this problem. So that's what we took up this year, and that's what we're looking at tomorrow.
Here's out of the report is that in Illinois, we find Illinois has bent or broken virtually every principle when it comes to sound budgeting practices.
So our start into looking at budgetary practices took us back to first principles. What are the things you should look to? What are the touchstones, the desiderata of budget practices? And we grouped them under we grouped four principles, and then under those four principles, we looked at the practices. Advanced planning, and you know, when I say these things, they're
common sense.
It really is a duh, right? Sustainability, matching, balancing current spending with current revenues.
There's something novel.
Flexibility. It's not always going to be a trend line. You're going to go up and down with revenues and spending obligations. There's going to be shocks and surprises. And transparency. You should report and disclose what you are doing in an understandable and timely way. And if you're violating one of these other principles, there ought to be some sort of a disclosure that alerts people to it. And that's where the concealment has come in the past. That's where the enabling of bad choices for decades.
Well, let's talk about that whole issue of transparency. I mean, what kind of practices has Illinois done where it's not being transparent?
Mostly, I would group the bad practices under the sustainability heading, but we didn't see them. For a big example, a huge example. Pension funding in Illinois is almost always discussed in terms of how are we meeting the payment from this 1994 law that said in 50 years we're going to get the pensions back to 90% funded. But we don't look at what the Governmental Accounting Standards Board says that you should be, if you ever get behind, 100% funded in 30 years. So there's a difference between what the state pays with gnashing of teeth and wringing of hands, oh, it's so big, and what would be necessary.
And would he be even bigger?
Right. What would be necessary to not even get further behind. So think of the pension payment as having three elements. The part of the current year contribution that goes with all the current workers gaining one more year of experience, and therefore, if you look forward to their pensions, there's a bigger pension because they have one more year of experience. So that's called normal cost in the lingo. And then second, it's like amortizing a mortgage, there's two elements to paying down the unfunded liabilities, the amount by which you've gotten behind, and that is the interest cost and the payment toward principal. We have not and will not on the current schedule pay anything towards principal, get the liabilities actually going down until 2030. So every year we get farther behind on pensions. People in the know that, but it's not announced. Here's the budget. And, oh, by the way, if you adhere to that budget, there's an extra billion or two that we're getting behind.
I want to move things a little bit forward in light of our current budget situation where, and this is why this is so, I think this is why it's so important, is because we're going to have to raise revenue, we're going to have to cut taxes, or cut spending, rather, and raise revenue. And as you say in the report, no one, policymakers, voters, no one's going to be happy here. And there'll be losers. There'll be some winners. But unless you kind of lay out how you do in a responsible way, people won't necessarily, you know, they won't know how to adequately pick, you know, where we should go as far as determining what should get more money, what should get less money.
So full and clear disclosure does two things. First, it tells you how bad things really are. And, I'm Cassandra. I say this, the sky is the Chicken Little. But one of those two personas I have.
Among many, yes.
And others have been doing this for years. But better and clear and more clear reporting would help understanding of how bad things really are. So there's a shared understanding that things are really bad, but what does that mean? And therefore, you'd know how tough the choices really are. And if full and clear disclosure made you reveal how much you're shifting onto future taxpayers by whatever compromise, package that may eventually come out for the fiscal 16 budget. So you know both how bad things are, and you also know the time and winners-losers consequences of different choices that you're considering.
We're speaking to Richard Dye from the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois about how we can get a handle, truly, on how we spend money in this state of Illinois, even as we don't have a budget for the fiscal year of 2016. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. I don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree. I just want you for my own.
University of Illinois Ripcords from a couple of years ago with our little Christmas music here this morning. We're speaking with Richard Dye from the Institute of Government Public Affairs at the University of Illinois and talking about the current budget mess, but also kind of the things that helped contribute to our perpetually being in a budget mess. And one of the things, I know you kind of acknowledge some of this is duh, but the fact that the way budgeting is done in Illinois, it's near term, it's just for the year, there's no looking ahead at all.
Now, Representative Sandek said that there's always an election coming up and there's always that sort of focus. So I got into this back in 07, 08, the particular thing I'm doing now, the Fiscal Futures Project, looking at the Illinois budget objectively and with a longer-term focus, because I saw that lacking. You know, decisions were being made that had...
You're doing what government isn't doing.
I'm doing what government isn't doing. Decisions were being made that had effects in out years, but there was not an accounting for a number assigned to what was happening in those out years. It's always short-term, near-term, short-sighted. And that's an easy characterization of what budgeting has been and is, and one of the more charitable terms we could use. Only recently, only in the depths of the crisis, the cyclical crisis triggered by the recession and bubble burst back in 08, with revenues falling off sharply in 09 and 010, did we actually require some sort of a forward look, three-year look-ahead budgeting? That's great. That's a wonderful start, and the people who are doing it on the legislative side and the governor's side are putting out, you know, good and responsible documents asking some of the right questions. They're very limited in their scope, but that's it. That's all we do, and it's sort of separate, and it's here's the report that the legislation says we should do. But we don't look ahead farther than that. We don't. Other states look five years ahead. We don't really project spending. It's all revenues. And spending is just sort of a plug. We get those revenues, they would have to be cut. But, oh, no, the governor isn't proposing we cut them. That sort of stuff. There's no capital plan. There's this ad hoc every 5-7 years political consensus bills that we need stuff built. That's not planning. And note, with capital planning, it's always specific new revenues, another riverboat license, tax on this, tax on that. That's not a way to do business. You know that you have roads and buildings and big things that wear out or need to be replaced. You should plan for that on an ongoing basis. There's a procedure in use in most other states, authorized in Illinois, called fiscal notes, where anybody can ask for an analysis of a bill.
Well, I was going to get into this, because when we don't project the costs of what a law will be,
right.
You can request, when somebody proposes a law, let's say it cracks down on certain types of criminals, and so that means, is there going to be a financial impact to having to build more prison space? That's the purpose of these fiscal notes. But as you note, and as I've often seen, it's not people necessarily wanting to know what's the financial outcome of the laws we pass that request these fiscal notes. It's to try to block the legislation or delay it.
Exactly.
It's a political tool, not a practical financial tool.
We should plan for the future, and those plans should be meaningful and not just become legislative tactics, as that specific example is.
You noted that too, and I didn't really kind of consider it that way, but I can see how you would do it. The couple of years that the state didn't pay for pensions was in essence another form of borrowing, because we're freeing up money for other purposes here.
Exactly. There's all sorts of other forms of borrowing. The delay in bills payment to vendors, I mentioned in an earlier segment. Issuing bonds to pay for 1 year's contribution, which bonds go out 30 or 7 or 10 years, depending on which pension obligation bond series you're talking about. So that's taking sustainability was one of the principles I mentioned. There's two reasons that is a first principle. One is prudence. I know that's an odd word in Illinois, but you should match what you're spending with the sustainable inflow of revenues, not one-time sources, not borrowed sources, not spending assets that previously exist.
Not temporary taxes, as you also know.
Not one-time sources like temporary. So that's prudence. It's also, and this is huge, fairness. Sending the bill to future taxpayers is not fair. And there's only one example where it might be. But what's right about the mess that we're currently in. That means taxpayers now and for years going forward are going to have to pay for things that were purchased by the state decades past. That ain't fair. But we do it. It gets us to the next primary. It gets us to the next election. So not ignoring sustainability is both unwise and unfair.
So remember those words when you hear politicians decrying the tactics of kick the can down the road, because that's how we do government in Illinois.
And that's what metaphor I was trying not to use in explaining sustainability, as I did.
Would allow me to do that. Yeah. Richard Dye from the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois, thank you very much for coming up, waking up with me this morning, coming into the studio, and good luck with your event tomorrow where you lay out some of this in further detail.
Thanks, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this.